This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, you're listening to Queercast, Singapore's only LGBT podcast.
Hello again, everybody. This is Nick D, as always.
And Ian Lee.
And you're listening to another juicy, juicy episode of Queercast. You know, Singapore's only gay podcast focused on issues in Asia. And today we have someone from South Korea.
Woohoo! Hello, everybody. My name is Minu Jung from South Korea. I'm pursuing my PhD in Los Angeles at University of Southern California in sociology, and I'm currently conducting my multi-sided research about LGBT rights in Asia, including Singapore, Taiwan, and South Korea.
So welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. No, so, you know, you told me, that you recently went to Seoul Pride. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, as you were sort of, you know, telling me what happened there, I was like so amazed. Mm-hmm. Because I like to think that I'm pretty well-informed homosexual. You know, I go to Facebook, you know, I saw people on Grindr, that kind of thing. But even I've never heard of Seoul Pride before. So can you just tell us a little bit about mm-hmm. Seoul Pride?
So this year was the 18th year of the Seoul Queer Pride Parade. So the local title of the event is actually, as you see here, Korea Queer Culture Festival. Mm-hmm. So it started as more like a cultural celebration mm-hmm. of the queer existence in South Korea back in the early 2000s or something. And then it has been enlarged in terms of the turnouts mm-hmm. and also the anti group who's been appearing, next to us, right? Mm-hmm. So this year, officially, according to the official record, mm-hmm. the turnout was like 85,000 who attended the Seoul Pride Parade.
That's crazy.
And then there's also like thousands of police force mm-hmm. that surrounded in order to kind of protect the mm-hmm. participants from both sides, mm-hmm. According to them, So they're trying to avoid any kind of physical confrontation between the Seoul Pride participants versus the anti-group participants, right? So the anti-group has been also getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. So this year they were like basically surrounded the Seoul City Hall, mm-hmm. which where the Seoul Pride was happened. Mm-hmm. And then they also followed the Pride March as well later. Mm-hmm. And then they're holding a smaller protest here and there across the street, mm-hmm. everywhere in the metro station, mm-hmm. and they're like standing in line like this, mm-hmm. Parallel, holding pickets something like no homosexuality, no same sex marriage, mm-hmm. we are sons and daughters of God, yeah. Not same sex couple or something, something like that. And they're basically cursing those who are walking mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. the entrance of the Seoul Pride Parade, right?
Right.
So this scene of confrontation was a very symbolic scene mm-hmm. of this year. And mm-hmm. also for the past couple of years. So that shows that the emerging visibility of the LGBTQ people in Korea is equally, made visible by the anti-group as well.
Oh,
so that's the kind of typical public understanding of the LGBTQ issues in general mm-hmm. in Korea, that it's like the confrontation of the two differing groups rather than, solely human rights issues or diversity and inclusion issues.
And is sort of the anti-group, you mentioned that line about all sons and daughters of God, is mm-hmm. that group then sort of largely religious?
Yeah,
heavily religious, primarily religious.
Okay.
So it's easy to kind of identify who they are, although they might seem as like just funny people wearing some traditional hanbok costumes mm-hmm. and dancing some according to some traditional music and then mm-hmm. Drumming the mm-hmm. percussions and things like that, but they are primarily like mobilized by different church groups across the nation.
Okay.
Right, so you can easily right after the Pride you can easily see a lot of like tour buses mm-hmm. That actually want to take them back to their own hometown. So they're just mobilized across the country.
Okay. And in terms of like the demographic of these protesters, are they usually like people slightly older? Are they like young people, or is it a very mixed bag?
Very mixed in terms of age, mm-hmm. as age, gender, mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a new phenomenon, I mm-hmm. guess. Like back then, it was mostly like the old folks who are also the core part of the supporters of the former president, mm-hmm. Park Geun-hye, mm-hmm. who's currently mm-hmm. in jail, mm-hmm. right? So typically the anti-LGBT bloc is in conjunction with the anti-democracy and Christian, like the
lobby.
Yeah. So they're all like aligned together. Mm-hmm. But these days, the anti-LGBTQ group is becoming much more diversified.
Internally. Interesting.
So you can easily see like very young folks, you know, mm-hmm. like even kids like in their early teens or like even underaged folks, mm-hmm. you know, holding these kind of pickets without mm-hmm. really knowing what they're saying, mm-hmm. right? And then there's also old folks. Mm-hmm. And then those who are actually dancing are mostly women.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that also shows that how like the phenomena of religion-based homophobia is like heavily gendered phenomena as well.
Okay, so it's a that's an interesting point. It's a heavily gendered phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So the people that are, you know, opposing basically are mostly female.
I'm not trying to say that it's like, you know, most of the females are opposing it. I mean, mm-hmm. but then it's more like, so a lot of females are mobilized to do this kind of, you know, visible work, right. While right. men's are like, you know, doing the work behind the scenes.
Interesting. Right?
Like
okay.
And then, you know.
So being the visible face mm-hmm. of the protests mm-hmm. are women. That's interesting. Okay. Okay.
You know, let's move on to outside of the camp. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, what's it like in the, what's it like, you know, on the other side of the fence, and like, what was the atmosphere like for the uh-huh. LGBT participants in
yes,
the...
Yes. So usually it's being called as the queer national holiday for a lot of LGBTQ people, mm-hmm. meaning right. that they really prepare to attend and participate this, you know, mm, thinking about right. the costumes, you know, what to wear, how mm. to, how to like, you know, do drag, how to...
That's every Saturday night.
Right. Yeah. So but for them, it's not every Saturday night, right. but for once a year kind mm-hmm. of event, right? Mm-hmm. So you can see a lot of, you know, interestingly costumed people, mm-hmm. the pride, but this year it was like rained.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit tougher than usual. Mm-hmm. And it was also very hot. Because the organizing committee had to actually move the original date from early June to mid-July because of their kind of tricky relationship with the Seoul city government.
Mm-hmm.
That the Seoul city government did not respond properly
okay.
of the request, like how to use the city square. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, other groups already booked it, so you cannot really use
I
it,
see.
You know, something like that. So they basically ignored the request from the Pride committee, Pride organizing committee. Mm-hmm. So they had to relocate the date to mid-July, which
see.
Is like this rainy season.
But it still was a great turnout, 85,000 uh-huh. people. Mm-hmm. That's a huge amount of people, mm-hmm. right? So, but, you know, you have this event that's once a year, right? But, you know, what about the rest of the 364 days?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's, you know, sort of gay life like in South Korea? Can you sort of paint us, you know, like a broad picture of what is it like?
Okay, so I can start by describing like how, like what kind of groups are participating in the Seoul Pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there were like more than 150 community booth applications. Right, mm-hmm. as you can also see here in Pink Dot, right? 30 mm-hmm. something community booths were there this year, right? But then in Korea, it was more than 150 applications, and they had to reject like 50 something,
mm-hmm.
So only 100. But then some booths kind of share them with the rejected ones, so it's like 110 something
okay.
community groups
right,
who
right.
were representing and then, you know, selling mm-hmm. you know some like rainbow related mm-hmm. items and their own brochures mm-hmm. and booklets and things like that. So I've collected some of these for you mm-hmm. guys
yeah.
And then they represent a variety of, you know, identity-based groups and religion-based groups, both, you know, mm-hmm. Christian, Catholic, Buddhist, and then, you know, different, just so many different groups. And then so
many. There's a very diverse
uh-huh.
sort of set of resources
right.
that caters to the community
right. uh-huh.
there in
so
South Korea.
It's amazing. And then a lot of them relied on, you know, in producing their own, like, rainbow items to mm-hmm. sell or to get donated, they relied heavily on the crowdfunding, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them easily get donations that amounts to at least 1,000 to 10,000.
Okay.
So a lot of, you know, let's say it's, it, I wouldn't say it's a pink money in the Western mm-hmm. sense, mm-hmm. but it's kind of the money that's mm-hmm. that's targeted and then, you know, that's circulated within the queer economy, mm-hmm. so within the community, right? So it's a lot of money flowing in, mm-hmm. but then the thing is that we don't have like primary like funding sources, mm-hmm. like here in Singapore. There's no corporate sponsors.
Right.
Not mm. like there's few corporate sponsors, right? Mm. So for example, the Seoul Pride, it's 18th year. It's really large, and you see the stage, it's pretty professional. Mm-hmm. According to my Taiwanese friends who's visiting there, they were like really amazed at the amazed by the setup of the stage, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then the performances on stage and everything, it looked so professional. It's mm-hmm. a lot of money, right? But then they're strictly relying on the small donations from individuals and small organizations, okay. but not much from the corporate, not much from the mm-hmm. government, especially mm-hmm. due to the past 10 years, like, you know, heightened government regulation on civil society in general. So mm-hmm. that cuts off a lot of funding for right. these LGBTQ-related groups, right? And then there's no international funding either because of the South Korea's developed economic status. So, you know, if you can think about the major sources of LGBTQ activism all around the world, it's either from the government or from the international organizations like the UN-related or EU-related
right.
organizations
mm, right.
or the corporate, right? Mm-hmm. But then South Korea, interesting part of the community organizing and activism in South Korea is that they're heavily relies on the small donations from individuals, right? Mm-hmm. So they utilize this kind of banking system that the registered member of these organization can donate like a set amount of money, like let's say like $10 a month or something. Mm-hmm. So they are, a lot of them are operated based on the base of that membership fee, basically. Mm-hmm.
So it's good that all these groups basically operate at a very grassroots level mm-hmm. and it's funded mm-hmm. by the grassroots. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on a national level, mm-hmm. you know, what does that picture look like?
That's a great question. So an interesting part of the legal structure in terms of homosexuality and LGBTQ issues in general in South Korea is that there's no legal space for homosexuality. Mm-hmm. We have some space for transgender people, right? So you can do sex change mm-hmm. on your ID once you meet certain standards, right? Although the standards are already kind of tough to get through, right? You have right. to, you know, get rid of your sexual organ and mm-hmm. everything, right? And then you can't become a father or mother of a kid or something like that. Anyways, within the civil law, there's no space for homosexuality, mm-hmm. meaning that it's neither recognizing nor criminalizing homosexuality, right? So it's kind of an interesting absence that, you know, there might be some. So, and then for me, it seems like it creates a lot of ambivalent outcomes for the lives of LGBTQ people that because it's not being criminalized, you know, there's a lot of, you know, basically LGBTQ targeted economies. Mm-hmm. Like there's a bunch of, you know, gay bars and clubs, and they often come and go, right? Renovate and then reopen, and then you can easily see like hundreds and thousands of people on every Saturday, Friday nights hanging out there. But again, it's kind of separated from the community organizing and activist efforts, right? Mm. So the especially gay targeted economies and the activisms and community organizing efforts that try to change the society is kind of separated.
Interesting.
There were efforts to bridge the two, mm-hmm. but it hasn't been that successful, I guess.
Okay. I think there's some similarities. Like, you know, there was always a bit of tension in Singapore before where we talk about, you know, there's a bunch of people who are the party queens and mm-hmm. then there's a bunch of community queens. Mm-hmm. And betwixt, sometimes some efforts were required to find that common ground and that overlap. I think we were lucky in the sense that for many of us in the earlier years, a lot of our community spaces also doubled up as party spaces mm-hmm. at night. Mm. So there was that natural overlap there already.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, you see that that there's this ambiguity and sort of things are just basically left as status quo, even though, you know, there is still a very active gay mm-hmm. community, mm-hmm. Both on the party scene mm-hmm. as well as the community scene. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned previously that Park Geun-hye was impeached because of a corruption scandal, and now President Moon just got elected to the job. He outwardly seems, you know, like a very peace-loving person. He wants to have talks with North Korea and stuff like that. Are you... What is his stance for the LGBT community?
So that's an awesome question. So back in the election period, which actually happened quite earlier than originally scheduled, right, because of the impeachment, right? So when doing the presidential rally, there were definitely, you know, questions both from the LGBTQ communities as well as the conservative side, right? Like, so what's your position in terms of homosexuality? Are you agree with, are you supporting homosexuality? Are you supporting same-sex marriage or not, right? And then his answer was definitely, no, I'm not. I recognize as someone who has a human rights lawyer background, I recognize that people out there exist, but that I'm not a supporter of human rights of LGBTQ people. Right. So there was a very political answer, and that's also it seems like it's also being implemented in the government level, the new government level as well. Right. So the 18th Queer Culture Festival's slogan was this: no later, but now we change. So no later actually originally came from Moon supporters' phrase when a group of queer activists were trying to involve in the some kind of press conference about women's rights and gender rights. When then presidential candidate Moon was giving a speech or something, then these queer activists protested against him, like, you know, when, like, where is our right as queer people? Where is the queer citizenship or something like that? How can me as a lesbian, you know, woman can be departed, like, partly woman and partly lesbian, and then half is considered legitimately and the other half is not, or something like that. And then supporters of Moon yell them back, later. So your cure rights are for later, right? So that's why they picked up the later thing, and then, you know, to make it more like a now we change thing, right? So that's the current political, that really kind of captures the current political climate.
So yeah, there's obviously sort of this sense of urgency basically behind the movement. And, you know, like I said, it's also so similar to what's happening in Singapore, where, you know, every year Pink Dot gets bigger and bigger, but so does the pushback, right? And it is always in the interest of the government basically to sort of maintain the status quo because they believe in stability and they don't want, you know, upset people.
Yeah, and basically they're saying that, you know, oh, the society will change when it's ready, you know. And in a sense, they're also kind of saying, you know, wait, later, it will come, it will happen. But there is no sense of urgency from their side of things. So I know you've been traveling around the region, you know, the Taiwan, the Singapore and other places. So how about other LGBT celebrations that you've seen in the past 2 months? Which... You know, are there any similarities that you've seen between Seoul Pride and their events?
And or differences?
That's a very interesting question. Definitely there are some similarities when thinking about Pink Dot and Seoul Pride. But then, as you guys are well aware of the Pink Dot, you know, it's very like family and ally and friends oriented, you know, event that shows... you know, that shows to the society that we are like this, you know, this good people, you know, we're like this. But the queer pride in Korea is much more mixed, right? So there are some group of people who wants to make it more protesty, right? And then the other group trying to make it more cultural event, right? Not, we are not harming, you know, we're like the equal right-bearing citizens, you know, we are harmless. And then so there has been always the debate about the nudity of, you know, the participant. Like, how can we...
These scantily clad queens, girls, these boys in speedos, right?
But I couldn't... So in terms of... Because the Taipei Pride Parade is scheduled in late October, right? So I it's yet... but then I heard that it's much more... how can I put it?
Diverse. Yeah.
Diverse.
Scantily clad.
Scantily
clad men are part of the diverse spectrum, you know what I mean?
Definitely,
yeah.
Celebrate
exactly.
Their,
I mean, like, but I think, you know, that whole sort of idea where we have this constant PR problem, like, oh, you know, we really shouldn't have these guys in G-strings walking down the road because, you know, they harm our image,
right.
Quote unquote, you know what I mean? But, you know, when you think about it, but this is who people are, right? And you have to understand that, you know, the our sexuality is so diverse and represents so many communities, and it's not just that one family-friendly image, right?
Yeah, right. So it ladders up to this whole idea of whether do we as queer people integrate into the heteronormative society, or do we carve out our own unique identity and we play with our own rules?
Seems like it's never ending.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to learn some Korean phrases while you're here, right? So I can sort of help, you know, if I go to Korea, like, what are the things that I need to say and stuff. So we start with something simple, like, hello, how are you? How do you say that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I know what you want, right?
Okay.
So you want to approach a cute boy,
right? So you say, hi.
Right? How are you saying hi?
Yeah.
But you don't want to say hi. You just call the person, right?
Okay.
So you know oppa, right?
Oppa?
So you call oppa regardless of the person's age or, you know, gender representation or whatever.
Right. Really?
You find him cute and then you call him oppa.
Oppa? Okay. What does oppa mean?
Oppa's like, you know, elder brother. So usually a female person calls an elder brother, like someone who's older than him or older than her, oppa, right?
Okay.
And then it's also an intimate term used between like lovers.
Right. Okay. What about for females? Do they have the same?
So females call males oppa.
Okay.
Like older males.
Right.
But the opposite, there's nuna.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
So I've met this oppa. It's like super cute.
Uh-huh.
And it says like, do you want to go out for a drink?
Okay, sure. So that's kind of complicated, right?
Okay.
I mean, you cannot memorize the complicated phrase. So there's a simplified version that I developed recently for my Singaporean friends, which is actually ilu cute, right?
Cute.
Which is kyo.
Oppa, kyo.
Yes. So oppa, you call the person, you call him.
Okay.
And then you appraise him, right?
Okay.
Kyo, you look so cute, right?
Okay.
And then kyo. What's the next step?
Okay, so oppa, you know, now we're having a drink, right? So oppa, you top or bottom? These are important questions, people.
Right.
These are important questions. I don't want to be in dicey situations, right?
I think if you're using just top, bottom...
Oh, like, so it's very
it's
Western.
Transliteration. Yeah.
So it's like, there's no... Is there... There's no Korean word, basically. There's no slang.
There used to be, but it kind of died out.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So nowadays, like, a lot of people just use top, bottom.
Okay, so how do you ask a person if he's top or bottom?
Just ask top or bottom.
Oh, just top, bottom? Okay, well, these are, like, really, like, short phrases.
Yeah,
they're like,
yeah.
Oppa, yo, top or bottom?
Oh.
And then you figure that out.
Okay.
And then you ask him to go out to find a place to stay, right?
Okay.
And then there's an easy word for you guys.
Okay.
자자.
자자.
So it literally means like, let's sleep together.
Right.
It sounds cute.
Right.
Know, like,
yeah.
자자, right? And then since your Korean will not be perfect, so it sounds cute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if it fails, it still sounds cute, right?
Okay. So it seems that the language is sort of very much entrenched in this cuteness kind of thing. Like very Japanese as well. So we're actually out of time right now, but we thank you for coming on and sharing your insights with us and your interviews. And I know that you're going to be traveling to different parts of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
In Taiwan, you're going to be spending 5 months there, and hopefully we'll connect and maybe you know, follow up and see what your adventures bring.
Great.
So as
part
always
two.
Yeah,
yes, part two.
As always, you're listening to Nick D,
Yun Lee,
all right, and
Minu.
Yay. Bye
bye.
This episode of Queercast was possible thanks to the support of Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, Australia's only LGBTI radio station, who hosts our podcast. Keep queer voices on air and on podcast by becoming a member today at joy.org.au. We also have to thank our community collaborator, Uga Chaga, a non-profit counselling and personal development organisation for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and questioning individuals. They do incredible work for the community, and you can help them continue their good work by donating. visit www.ugachaga.com. Lastly, we want to say thank you to you, our listeners. And if you want to stay updated on new episodes or have an early sneak peek for future guests, follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Links to all our social media handles and our partners can be found in the description. Thanks, and we love you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.